Nice. It's funny. I do all these like episodes and podcasts, and I never know how to start. It's always like, so, or tonight I'm thinking about. So tonight I'm talking to two people, Anna and Emily. I'm going in alphabetical order, so there's no favoritism. And I had the privilege of working with both of them this summer, or kind of really working near you. I wouldn't say I get to really work with either of you that much on the field, but kind of working around you at the climbing school in Acadia, Key Mountain Guides. And I specifically thought of these two for this conversation because I feel like they're kind of in similar life places. They kind of have roughly the same age, out of school, done some climbing instruction in the past, as well as other activities, other outdoor activity instruction. I feel like this summer was maybe your first like real like I'm gonna be a rock guide all summer and that's what I do. Came into this super motivated and focused. Both of you I would categorize as pretty focused and organized and motivated, which was really awesome. And then now you're on the other side, kind of moving forward, and we're gonna talk about that journey a little bit. So, but maybe we should just start with a maybe you could each introduce yourself just a little bit, and just kind of talk about like maybe where you're from, maybe what you did in school, and then kind of how you got into this wanting to be in this profession. Because a pretty broad profession, right? So doesn't have to necessarily be climbing in specific, but the profession in general. So let's keep the alphabetical order just on this one. So Anna, why don't you start?
All right. My name's Anna Kolinsky, and I'm from Central Maine. And I went to school at the University of Maine in Orono. And I studied English, but the way that I sort of found my way into the outdoor industry was through our outdoor program at the school called Mainbound, which John Tierney actually started, who runs the climbing school now. So coming out of college, I had this degree that I wasn't really that motivated to keep studying. And I just knew that I really liked being outside, had done a little bit of climbing instruction. And, a week before I graduate, I ask the director of that program, what do I do now? And he goes, well, you could be a ski instructor. So it was all downhill from there, literally. I use that joke all the time. But yeah, so I started my first season ski instructing. It was really great. And then I've just kind of kept on this path because it's something that I keep enjoying and it's something that keeps fitting in. And found my way to AMG. That's the short story. I could go on, but
I think the short story is fair.
yeah.
Nice. Emily, what about you?
Yeah, so I didn't start rock climbing until I graduated high school. I took a trip out to Utah and I went to an indoor rock climbing gym. And I was like, this is awesome. I could climb all day long. And I actually lived in Texas at the time. And I went back to Texas and I was climbing as much as possible. And I started to work at the climbing gym and I started to coach kids down there as well. And then I had this like dumb realization that rock climbing, like you can climb on roofs. It's just like not a concept that a lot of people think about down in Texas, at least, because it's all about indoor climbing. So I moved out to Utah to rock climb outdoors. And I was kind of taking a gap year in between high school and college. And when I decided to go to college, I just found that I really wasn't motivated to go to class. I was studying astrophysics, which is super fun and cool, like really interesting, but all I wanted to do was rock climb and to teach people how to climb. And so I did a bunch of research as to how I could actually make money doing that because it was a passion I had. And I found the AMGA and I was like, oh, this is perfect. And I realized like I could be an international mountain guide. And that just seemed like the coolest concept to me. And so I have set out a path that I've been following over the past couple of years, guiding for various companies throughout the states and on different terrain to try to become an international mountain guide. And so now I'm just here in Maine working on the winter side of things.
Nice. If you wouldn't mind sharing the information you found on how to make a living at this with me, that would be awesome, because I'd love to know how to make a living at this.
Me too, Emily.
Nice. So let's think back about the two of you beginning of the summer, before you even showed up. Like, what were some things that you were maybe nervous about in terms of coming into, you know, kind of your first season on a guide staff in kind of this capacity, some things you really hope to gain? And one thing I was thinking about earlier that might be an interesting thing is, like, was there something that you anticipated, but it was very different than once you did it? And that could be like, I thought it was going to be awesome and it was not, or I thought this part wasn't going to be awesome and it was, you know, just something that kind of like, you're like, whoa, I did not anticipate that, or it's very different than what I expected. So, and we can go, whoever wants to start, we don't have to go alphabetical order anymore. So whoever's quick on the draw.
All right. You asked a lot of questions. So I'm going to start with one. You said what we were expecting before we came into the summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or where we were.
Yeah.
So I was coming back from Colorado and I was kind of coming off of a pretty cool road trip, and, you know, doing a lot of moving is kind of difficult. Something that you do in the outdoor industry quite a bit, unless you're lucky to have like all the things right in your backyard. So we came in and did some training, and that actually was really relaxing for me. Coming in and knowing that there was going to be some training ahead of time is like really my happy place. And then did a little bit of, kind of practice. And once the guiding started, I think it was really different, because the one thing that I wasn't expecting was just how like client interactions would be. So a lot of my outdoor experience has been either with peers, like people my age in college, or with kids. So it was really interesting to deal with, you know, couples and parents and just the social side. So for me, it wasn't so much about the technical side, although that was always, you know, going to be a challenge in your first year in the terrain. But that was something that was pretty surprising for me. It was just, yeah, I don't know if you experienced that, Emily, if you want to elaborate.
Yeah, I was coming from like a different side of things. I was kind of in a fork of like a career decision where I could go to Colorado and go out west and to guide out there, which I had been out there before climbing and I was really stoked on, or I could take this wild opportunity and go out to Maine, which I had never even been to the East Coast, or even more east than Texas, which that's not even east at all. And so I was just amazed by the beauty of Acadia and of Maine, and I just totally didn't expect that. And I'd say some of the challenges I did face were learning the terrain, kind of like what you were talking about. And as a rock climbing guide, you're not only just teaching people how to climb, but you end up kind of being their guide in general. So like I had to learn the area, I had to learn like the geography, the history, even just like restaurant recommendations, which oftentimes were just the restaurants that I saw on the main street. I was like, oh yeah, that one would work out well for you, I guess. I don't know you or this restaurant, but yeah, it was a very different experience guiding on sea cliffs too, just compared to regular cliffs. And I learned that not everybody is out there to get a huge pitch count. I thought that was like what made a great client experience. And that was something that I quickly learned that did not make a great client experience, and that some clients just wanted to go out there and to be in nature. Others wanted to just try to overcome a fear of heights, or just to try rock climbing in general. So that was a cool learning curve that I had.
Yeah, I mean, I think Acadia in particular, I'm sure other places that get high volume of tourism will have more of a spectrum of users, but we have a really big spectrum of like 4-year-olds on rope, you know, to someone who's climbed pretty significantly. So like, just like you mentioned, there's a pretty broad range of interactions, and sometimes within a group that you're taking out, there's a huge spectrum of people you have to talk to. And I've always found that the guiding in Acadia has been, you know, the terrain doesn't really change, but the people always do. So that's what keeps me really motivated, and being able to navigate that piece, that social piece. Like the technical skills are kind of easy once you kind of get a little practice on, but that piece is always interesting to me, and fascinating and challenging at times. But I really have appreciated being in that clientele, because it's allowed me to teach better when I go to other places, for example. And I really attribute that to that. Now, you both mentioned terrain. I love it when especially younger guides use that word terrain, because it's like, it's such this present thing in my head all the time. It's terrain, work the terrain, think about the terrain, understand the terrain. So, and Emily, you kind of alluded to this a little bit, like Acadia kind of has some interesting terrain for single pitch. Multi-pitch, the terrain there, I would say, is pretty normal multi-pitch terrain, but the single pitch terrain's kind of wild. What would some of your, and Anna, you had actually worked there in the past with the university program, so you kind of knew a little bit more, but tell me a little bit more about the experience of having to deal with some dynamics of terrain that are atypical with rock climbing. So we have the ocean piece, and how that kind of shaped how you did your guiding, how you structured your lessons, or how you did anything, that piece that was there, kind of always present.
Oh man, that's like such a loaded question, because the sea cliffs are totally different than like the south wall of Champlain. But I'd say all of a sudden you realize that you're in a more intense environment when you're guiding on the sea cliffs. Somebody who's scared of heights is now probably all of a sudden very scared of the ocean. And so trying to teach them and keep them calm, and to try to coach them over the edge of a cliff, which is now over a roaring ocean. And if the weather's bad, like with hurricane weather, like those waves are going to be even bigger. And that I think the coaching aspect just significantly increased in difficulty with that kind of terrain. But what was really cool about the sea cliffs is that there were so many options for how you use the terrain. Like I would go out and I would build different anchors than other guides. And then I'd be like, oh, wow, that's a genius way to build that. Let's try that technique. Or like you can just say that wall looks cool to climb. Let's build an anchor there and put some clients on it. And you just had a lot of room to experiment, but you also had to deal with like just the complications that came with it.
Nice. And any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with the whole clients being afraid of the ocean all of a sudden thing. Yeah, it ramps up the intensity a lot. And something that I was always having to decide was whether to put people on a base managed top rope first or just start with an oceanside climb. And sometimes, depending on where you were, depending on the terrain that was available, you might make a decision to just go straight for the rappel down to the ocean. And I will say sometimes it worked out if I was really on it and if my clients were really psyched, but more often than not, it kind of put you in a little bit of a tricky spot, trying to coach people. But a lot of the more tenured guides had a real finesse with it, so I was always striving to achieve that.
Yeah, the
totally.
Oh, go for it, Emily.
Oh, I was gonna say another thing is they have to get back up the cliff. Like a lot of other places, if you start them at the top of the cliff, maybe they can like hike out from the bottom or whatever. But it's like, no, this is a huge commitment factor. Like if you go to the recreational side of Otter Cliffs, like they're bigger walls, they're harder routes. You have to really make sure that your client can climb the route, or else you're gonna have to haul them out. And then at the South Otter Cliffs, like you're in it to win it kind of thing. And you still have to climb out of the area once you're in it.
Nice. So like, I think some of the comments you made about dealing with clients just on the social side of things, kind of the soft skills or meta skills, and then maybe the terrain piece you're talking about, and then the technical things. Think about the progression where you were at the beginning of season and then at the end of the season. right? And kind of what you gained. And if you could distill down a couple, like one or two, like choice pearls of wisdom that you would give a guide starting off the same place you were, like the next summer, you're like, all right, so this is your first summer. You're just going to start this. I just went through this. Here's one or two things that's going to really, you should think about, or I found really empowering or interesting. Ooh, silence.
That's a good question. I think that these two things go into the soft skills, kind of like in the root section of it though. So one thing is, as the guide, you set the pace. And if you feel that we're going too fast or too slow, then that's a sign that you need to change something. And that can be like involving your clients significantly. So like if one kid is like super excited to climb and wants to climb everything and is just bouncing off the walls kind of thing, but his other siblings aren't, or there, it doesn't have to be a boy. Then that's, it's interesting because you kind of have to like harness their energy and try to give it to the others. Or like if everyone's going slow and a storm is rolling in, like that's a time when you need to quicken the pace. But if you're in control of how everything is going, like with the pace, then you can find that it's a less stressful environment and that you can think more clearly as to what you're doing right now and then planning for the next climbs. You always have to be kind of planning ahead as a guide. Another thing is guide care is client care. That was kind of a phrase that we tossed around a lot on the rocks. If you're not hydrated or like if you're hungry, then that's gonna compromise your ability to guide. So feel free to take breaks, like get a drink of water, eat a granola bar. Like your clients are not gonna just be able to go for the entire like 4, 6, or 8 hour session, whatever length of session you're guiding. And also if they see you eating and drinking, they're probably going to do the same thing. And then that saves you more time and like energy from saying, hey, everybody, let's take a break. But again, that's like the pace setting too. You can definitely say like, let's take a break, get to know your clients. That definitely plays into the soft skills of things too.
Nice. Very sage advice.
I would say two things that I wish I had done earlier in the summer that I think would have helped out a lot were fitness, first of all, because getting in and out of South Otter takes a huge toll on the body when you've got a heavy pack, you know, multiple ropes. And by the end of the summer, I sort of felt more worn down than fit, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So just the repetitive nature of it was definitely challenging. And the other piece is just practice. So the most stressful thing in those first few sessions is going up there and creating the rope systems and knowing that, oh, I might have to change something. And is that going to take time? And there's definitely a time and a place to change things during the session. But just building lots of anchors, weighting lots of systems, practicing all of your hauling skills, that was huge to keep practicing throughout the season. And I definitely was glad to get out and like just do some really focused practice. But I think in the beginning of the season, more could have been really helpful. And Emily and I actually did go out and do a lot of anchor building, and we did that checklist that we got. Nice. And I still feel like, you know, it's good to focus on it, and it's good to go out with a couple of friends and just think about it. Like we did later in the season.
Man, you two are nailing it. I love all the stuff. That's such great advice to give somebody, anybody, not just someone who hasn't had that experience, but to remind somebody to go out and practice or think about pacing. Pacing's such a big deal, especially as you get into other aspects of guiding, but it's still there. Really awesome. Love it. Now, I'd like to ask, like, what have been some challenges for you? And it doesn't necessarily have to be like just this summer. I mean, I'm talking about your arc into this industry, up to where you are right now, and maybe even projecting like what might be a challenge for you moving forward in the short term, but things that have, you've kind of, I don't know, whatever that means to you.
A challenge in the outdoor industry for me has been balance. Mm-hmm. So going from season to season, it's really tempting to just work as hard as you can, you know, get every single day in that you can, because you know that with the stormy season comes the drought, right? So in the fall, there kind of tends to be this lull in the outdoor side of things that you can do unless you have something lined up. So during the season that you are super busy, just making sure that you actually get out there and you do some things for you. You go do some personal climbing in the middle of the summer, even though you're tired. And maybe just focusing on things that can be more consistent, like having a hobby, you know, if that makes any sense. Because come fall this year, it was pretty, there was not much going on. And that can be tough, right? Like, even though I took time for my body to recover, did a lot of things that I wanted to catch up on, it still was, you know, it was a little difficult to kind of move back into this season with the same energy after coming off of such a lull.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And like, there's a pressure to work every day of the summer, but realistically, like, there's no way that you can work every day and be your best for every client and for every day, you know? And I think for me, that was more of a strain, like the financial side too, because you're like, oh, well, work is good right now. Who knows when we're going to have more rain? Like, this season, we had a ton of rain in Acadia, especially like at the beginning. And so it's like, oh, well, I have these 2 days off and then I work like these 5 days, but 3 of those 5 days, it was raining. So maybe like, I don't want to take those 2 days off that I actually had, like maybe I can pick up work. So like just the inconsistency of guiding can be very difficult from a financial standpoint for me, especially like wanting to take more courses. Courses are freaking expensive. And so it's nice that there's things like scholarships out there. But then like as another thing for guiding or like just working in the outdoor industry or rock climbing is, and Anna, we've talked about this so many times, it's just being a woman and also being on the shorter side of being a woman too, like can make it like a physical challenge. But also like you get people who think that just because you're a woman and you're smaller in stature that you can't haul them up a route if they get stuck, and you're like, oh no, I have brains, not necessarily all the brawn that you're looking for, but my brains are pretty big, I can get you out of there. And then you also get really special moments where people are like, hey, I have this mother-daughter trip and I really want a female guide, and we would like you to take us out. I think those are really awesome experiences, not just a challenge, but it's also kind of like a blessing at times to get those unique experiences.
Nice. Yeah, once again, there's some really good stuff there. We could have several more episodes on any one of these tangents, which is really cool. Maybe we will at some point. This is really good. I mean, I think about just kind of watching you two at the beginning of the season and kind of like where you ended up, you know. And it's funny, Anna, actually, I really wanted to see more of your guiding this season, but for some reason we just never were in the right place. I saw Emily a lot more, but the couple times I did see you, I was like, Anna's really got this some game out here, and like I really enjoyed the organization. And when I didn't quite understand, I'm like, huh, what's Anna doing? And then you mentioned like, oh, I got a full day and I'm trying to like maneuver these clients and pace really well. And I was like, oh, she's totally got a plan, which I would actually expected. And then Emily, same thing for you, just like watching your comfort level, like in the beginning of the summer with the craziness of the sea cliffs towards the end, you're like, all right, we're going to go do this now. And I got this, you know, it's such an awesome thing for me to see that progression, for sure. And I was really excited to have some more women on the staff, on the guide staff. I thought we had a really good summer with a bunch of people at different points in their career, all really competent and motivated. And it was really nice. I think it changed the dynamic. And I love the fact, like you said, we can better place a guide to a client or a client to a guide. And that's really nice because that sometimes, like, there's just things I can't do with a certain client, or I just don't have the same life experience. As much as I'd like to work with everybody, I realize that sometimes I'm not the best person when there's other really great options available. So, which is really cool. So now that you're here, right? So Emily, you're working as a ski tech this winter, and you're really fired up to get some winter skills, so ice climbing, skiing, and start getting that mountaineering, start getting that stuff on your belt. Anna, you're working as a ski instructor, also fired up to do some more of that stuff. And we actually have a staff training together with some other folks in several days, which is kind of cool. So coming out of the summer, like, what's firing you up? What's keeping you potentially in this track? You weren't like completely, destroyed by a summer of rock guiding in Acadia, which was great. I've seen it, but what's motivating you to keep moving? And where do you think that needle's going? So Emily, like, just example, you said you were looking to be an IFMGA guide. The needle's still pointing pretty hard there. And Anna, like, where's your needle point? I'm not quite sure where your needle's pointing at this point, past this winter. Maybe you don't know.
I'm excited for Anna to talk about her goals. We've talked about that recently, but yeah, mine, I still want to guide internationally. And it seems like the IFMGA route is pretty much the best route for that. I mean, if you have any other ideas, let me know. But I absolutely love rock climbing, and it's really difficult for me to, we got a notification.
Yeah.
Never mind. Okay. It's really hard for me to take like breaks from climbing. And so I, after the season, went to Boulder, Colorado, and took my rock guide course and just spent a bunch of time climbing for myself, which was really rejuvenating. And then I came back out here, and I've just been trying to adapt to the idea of not being able to rock climb as much, but channeling that energy and excitement into maybe future trips, but as well as just trying to nerd out on the gear and to learn this new area. I live in Western Maine now. And just in 2 days, I've gone skiing, ice climbing, and rock climbing. So there's just so much to do out here and to explore. And I have a good amount of roommates who are into that same kind of thing. And it just makes it more accessible. So that's kind of how I'm keeping the stoke alive, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, your texts are very, judging by the font, very excited, which is awesome.
Yeah, we were so stoked on that night ice climb. That was so awesome.
Nice. Very nice. Kind of surreal.
Yeah, so Emily and I have been talking about what our plan is, what our goals are, and I really like admire Emily's track. You know, her needle is pointed and it's unwavering. And I, in a way, I wish that that was where I was coming from too, because I feel like it would take a lot of pressure off. But really, I don't know what my plan is. And that's kind of how I found my way into AMG. And I think right now I'm just trying to do what makes me happy, and I'm finding myself in good places so far. I think that having the IFMGA track is a little bit daunting for me, especially like, you know, having a degree in English. I still come back to the idea of maybe teaching in a school, or, you know, maybe just getting a regular 9-to-5 and recreating on the weekends. I still don't know what would be best. So for now, I'm just kind of going with the flow and coming back to things that make me happy. I wish I had a better answer, but I guess the moral of the story is that you can be like Emily and you can have this goal and you can want to do this and make it really fulfilling. And you can also want to do it and not have a goal. And it can still be really fulfilling that way too.
Yeah. I think that sounds awesome. You can only be who you are, right? So that's really cool. It's really neat to see two people, like I said, kind of why I wanted to talk to both of you at the same time, kind of coming into this like funnel, kind of roughly in the same place in my mind, right? And then now as you come out on the other side, it's like it actually widens back up again, right? It's going, because Emily's going this direction over here, and Emily, you're going in this direction over here, and who knows where those directions actually will go. Maybe they'll cross again, which is kind of cool. Yeah, there's a lot of ways to live this life. I think that's really interesting. So I don't want to take too much of your time tonight. Where are we at? 35 minutes. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I want, before we finish up, if there's any last pearls of wisdom or things you want to get out, you're like, this is my chance to be famous. I got to get this out now. It's not your chance to be famous. I'm sorry. But I really appreciated working with the two of you this summer. And I really hope I can continue to work with you for a long time, because it's been just fun. And I'd like to see the two of you go as far as you can. And I'll do my best to help you get there. So whatever I have to offer, it is yours. So, but any last pearls of wisdom as we kind of, it's like pitch black, because it's, well, I guess it's 7:30 now, but it's like pitch black at 4 o'clock now, December. But any last pearls of wisdom before we call it a night?
I really liked what Anna said of just like being yourself and doing what makes you happy. That's super important. And to add to that, you need to practice patience and self-compassion as much as possible. Because in both of our tracks in life, it's very easy to just beat up on ourselves for what we're not doing or what we wish we were doing. And there are things that just kind of slow us down sometimes, and it's okay. Like, I don't have to be an international mountain guide right now or in the next 5 years, because who knows what's going to happen. Like, injuries happen, and we just say life happens. So definitely patience and self-compassion.
My little nugget is, if you want to do what somebody's doing and you look up to someone, ask them questions, go out to coffee with them. I actually did a school project for a leadership class, and it was, the goal of the project was to just interview someone that you really look up to and find out like how they got to where they are, what motivates them. You could fake a school project to find out all you want to know. But my school project is real. But just ask around and ask people how they make it work. Because I've been doing that for 3 years, and so far so good. Sometimes I like to take people's ideas, and lots of people have cool side hustles like painting. And one of my friends who does some outdoor work is a hand model right now. She got a contract for 3 days. So, the world is your oyster. Just ask people. Nice. Because you could ask Emily and I, a number of questions, and we have so much more to tell,
Fair enough. I really wish that when I was entering my first year of guiding, that I had you two to tell me some of this stuff. And I'm like, wow, now I'm 44. And like, I'm like, wow, that's all really good stuff. I should try to do some of that balance in life. Holy cow. I'm just beginning to figure this out. So, awesome. I really appreciate talking to you two, and we'll see each other next week, and hopefully spend some time on the hill. So Have a good night.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Doug. Bye.